south of the border, down Mexico way. That's where I fell in love when the stars above came out to play. And now as I wander...
Hello there, all you expat wannabes. I'm Johnny Mueller, and you're listening to The Expat Files, Living in Latin America, the show that tells you just what it's like to live, work, play, and or retire down here in Latin America. It's a mix of the good, the bad, the ugly, and the great, and it's all right here, so let's get started.
All right, let's skip around a little bit today. By the way, there's some guys doing construction on the building next door, and if you hear some tapping and pounding, well, I've got no control over that. So, starting off, first let's read a piece of this email. It comes from Eric. He asked the following question in an online forum about moving to Panama. He's not posing this question to me. He was posing it to them, a gringo group down in Panama called Panama Relocation Tours. Here's the question. He says, if another COVID-like situation were to arise in Panama, do you think they'd handle it the same way as they did with the first COVID wave, with further heavy lockdown restrictions and other extreme measures? Then he sent me a link spelling out how severe and draconian they were in Panama during the COVIDian thing. It's a link to an article written by a couple of Canadians that started up an Airbnb in Panama. They explain exactly what it was like to be locked down in Panama for months at a time. Let me read some of this so you get the gist. It starts, my husband Lowell and I recently sold our home in Bowmanville, Ontario, and purchased one in a small beach community in Coronado, Panama. We opened an Airbnb that caters to writers and provides a space for writing workshops for expats. Needless to say, we were very fortunate. In less than 13 months, we had visitors from 19 countries. Some nights, we were so busy, we barely had a bed to crawl into ourselves. Then, it goes on, overnight, COVID-19 became a reality in Panama. Tourists were sent home and we had no guests, just bills to pay, including the caretaker's salary. He was a husband and father of two, so we kept him employed so his family didn't starve. We didn't go back to Canada, though. We cleaned and closed down our rental rooms and listened to the news. We were advised to go back to Canada, but we stayed. The airports then closed and there were some humanitarian flights back to Canada. They left without us. We were hoping we made the right decision to stay in Panama for the lockdown. We thought, why not? We felt we were fine. Panama is our new home. Then came the lockdown. Our beach location, Playa Coronado, became very quiet. Aside from the caretakers, people noises had disappeared, and now we were the only people living on our street. Here's what happened. All but essential services shut down, and we could not purchase necessary supplies or even employ the locals. We were in complete lockdown. According to the government, we could only leave our homes to purchase groceries or medications in a 2-hour period on assigned gender days. All right, meet Johnny here for a second. He said Panama had assigned gender days. What if you decided one day you were male and the next day female? Wonder how that would have went down. Just saying, I mean, Panama's loaded with wokesters. You've heard me say how gringo trail destinations are disproportionately loaded with wokesters. One big reason why I avoid those places. Anyway, the letter goes on. As for me, an introverted extrovert, I knew I would both love and hate my confinement. As days went by, I grew concerned about the sagging economy and wondered how long the shutdown would last. The worst part was that not a single person could tell us. We missed our daily walks and hikes and tried not to think about how we couldn't even go to the beach, right outside our door. Meanwhile, only a few people in the area contracted the virus, but we were instructed to wear masks at all times, sanitize our shoes and hands, and have our temperatures taken before we went to any store. In fact, a policeman holding a rifle blocked my entry to the store and quizzed me to prove I was shopping within my allocated gender and time. Needless to say, the Panama government instituted very strict prohibitions. There were armed police monitoring the streets for rule breakers. And there was public shaming. I cringed when quarantine violators were paraded down the street and made to clean the roads, while other quarantine violators were given machetes to clear out cemetery grounds, and a few were put in stocks for hours in the humidity and hot sun. Many others were fined and couldn't afford to pay, so they were arrested. All the while, government officials told us the quarantine was good for us. It would keep the COVID numbers down, they said. It would flatten the curve. As an aside, we donated money and purchased food for those in need and tried to ignore people who suggested hungry people would soon be stealing. By the way, the police came to our home twice and instructed us to keep our gate closed and our door locked so we wouldn't get robbed at gunpoint. Anyway, this first-hand article goes on for a few more paragraphs, but that's the gist of it. I really do want to thank Eric for this link. Pretty scary. And putting people in stocks for violating the curfew, like medieval days or the Old West, a really kind of terrifying first-hand account. Especially coming from a couple of nice Canadian expats who seem like really good people. By the way, if you want a copy of this article, send me an email, theexpatfiles@gmail.com. Though you really have to wonder why first world media never seems to publish stories like this. Now, of course, most of you longtime listeners know I don't recommend Panama for a plan B. I never did. Though everyone has to make those kind of decisions for himself, I think now, if you were on the fence about moving to Panama, after hearing those lockdown stories from Canadians, no less, I can only emphasize again, nice place to visit, but I wouldn't want to live there. So, Eric, if you're wondering if I personally think if there's another COVID-like situation, will Panama once again make virtual prisoners out of its residents? Well, why not? They got away with it the first time. And we've heard absolutely nothing from the international human rights do-gooders. It seems after turning their country into a virtual gulag, they got no pushback at all. So you think in another emergency situation, they won't be primed to do that again? Or worse? Hey, just my opinion. I'm not the answer man, but just saying. Oh, and Eric, about you getting on that YouTube Q&A with those Panama relocation gringos. Funny how when you ask the real important question like that about the lockdowns, you got no response at all. Ha ha. What's that say? It kind of smacks of how first world media outlets like CNN, NBC, ABC, etc. will never report bad news about Pfizer because guess who's a major advertiser? Guess who's paying the bills? Oh, by the way, Eric has a little PS on his email. He says, Johnny, he says, thanks for taking the time for answering my question regarding the Altiplano region of El Salvador. It was helpful to me and I'm sure others as well. All right, me, Johnny here. He's talking about how I answered that question on a recent show. Then he goes on to say how he didn't get his questions answered at all on that YouTube channel talking about Panama. He says, seems like straight answers are hard to come by. When I chatted on YouTube live stream today with Panama relocation tours, I chatted in two questions. As mentioned earlier, I asked if another COVID-like situation were to arise, would Panama handle the lockdown in the same way, with heavy, heavy restrictions and other extreme measures? He says the second question I asked was how the wind is in Panama. In their videos, I often see heavy wind blowing. I know you, Johnny, have discussed wind in the past and how strong it is and affected by which side of the mountain you're on. So I asked those two questions to see if I would get an honest answer. Well, guess what? I didn't get an answer to either of my questions. They just skipped right over them. So let me thank you, Johnny, for covering the good, bad, and the ugly, and the great. By the way, you remember my wife was gung-ho on Panama after she found and read the info that I just gave you about those extreme lockdowns and public shaming. She crossed Panama off the list as a Plan B destination. But unfortunately now, she's bringing up Costa Rica again. I'm thinking, why not Guatemala, which I love, and El Salvador, which I'm open to? I wish I had one of those work-from-anywhere jobs. But I know I'll figure something out when I get there. Then Eric signs off. Thanks, Johnny. You're much appreciated. By the way, Eric came to one of my very first Expat Insider seminars. He came alone without his wife, which is maybe why she's thinking about the usual suspects, Panama and Costa Rica. Because, as you may have figured, Guatemala and El Salvador are way off the tourist trail, and they're no one's first choice for a plan B. However, once you've got boots on the ground in either of those two countries, you change your mind in a hurry. Funny how that happens nearly every time. And now a little email excerpt from our man in Mexico, Oaxaca Bob. He says, Johnny, we're seeing migrants, as they're so-called here, all over the place in Oaxaca. And I've seen big crowds of migrants trotting north during trips to the Guatemalan border. And in the news, they're saying those migrants are reaching a new peak in El Paso, Texas, where the state of emergency was just declared. Then he sends me a link to a video showing the hordes of people ready to cross. He says, check out the video. It's really sobering. He says, have a look into the recently reported so-called migrant transfer camps in Panama, as reported by correspondent Michael Young. There are billboards in the camp showing the best routes for illegals, migrants, to take to get to the States, and clearly showing UN, that's United Nations, financing and support. Their symbols are written all over those billboards. Yep, it's illegal refugee overload. Migrant overload. From all over the world lining up at the border in busloads. Then he says, soon enough, I predict, with the demise of the U.S. banking system, it'll be buses full of white folks heading in the opposite direction. All right, thanks for that, Bob. I saw those video links you sent me. As for me, I'm thinking it's really got to be bad. CNN's down there reporting on it, calling it a migration dumpster fire. And you could thank Pinhead Joe. He wanted loose and open borders. He sure got them. Now, on that note, I can't resist a little rant here. Are you ready? Well, if not, maybe just take a bathroom break then as I blather on. Now, the thing is, over the years, I must have spoken to hundreds of people who've slipped into the States illegally, and many of them have been deported too and went right back to the States. I've spoken to some guys, and most of the deportees are guys, not women. Some who've been deported 3, even 4 times. Obviously, the guys that keep coming back and forth are risk takers. Latino women don't seem to have the stomach for it. Now, as far as the Latinas and Latinos who have made it over the border illegally, couldn't help notice there are certain commonalities in every last one of them. Number one, they all have smartphones. Some of them pretty expensive, too, much better than one I carry. And get this, most, if not all of them, barely have a high school education. None of them have marketable skills or university degrees at all. And none of them speak more than 20 or 30 words of English, unless, of course, they've been deported, lived in the States a while. Then they've got some basic street slang down. Now, when you ask them why they take the chance to go to the States illegally, they give one of two major reasons. Number one, for better opportunities. Number two, to leave a bad, dangerous neighborhood, as if they can't move out. Obviously, you can if you have a job that pays you enough money to get the hell out of their neighborhood and move into a nicer one, right? But they can't do that because they haven't got an education or a skill that's in demand. One that pays more than double the minimum wage, enough so they can get the hell out of a bad neighborhood. Meanwhile, I run into Latinos and Latinas all the time who don't want to go to the States because they have a decent job that pays maybe twice or more than the minimum wage. In other words, they've got marketable skills or a university degree. So that's always been the elephant in the room. How can a poor, minimum wage Latin American get a skill or an occupation when the public schools completely suck and they got no money to pay for private education? Well, guess what? There's this thing called the internet. Everyone down here over 12's got a smartphone, so they're connected to it. Cheap smartphones are $50. And guess what? You can learn anything, any skill. You can learn rocket science by just looking at YouTube. You've got the world's library for free at your fingertips. You want to learn how to program? It's on YouTube. You want to learn how to repair a computer? It's on YouTube. Yep, everything's in Spanish too. If a dirt poor Latino wanted to learn a language, maybe? English, maybe? Hint, hint. Learn that online with YouTube for free too. Whether it's physics, agronomy, furniture building, auto repair, it's all 100% available for free. You don't even have to read much. It's all in full color videos. Meanwhile, there are hundreds of thousands of people with no skills jammed at the border trying to sneak in illegally because they can't get a decent paying job in their own country. They can't get the hell out of their dangerous and shitty barrios. And somehow the notion goes right over their heads that the reason they're there in the first place at the border trying to sneak in is because they have no marketable skills in their own country. You see, it's a little known fact down here. If the average person makes $300 a month, they're just doomed to live in a shitty, dangerous barrio. Just like in the States, if you're making minimum wage or less, you'll be stuck in a dangerous ghetto or hood with 17 damn locks on the door. Isn't it funny that once a person makes, let's say, double the minimum wage, no matter which country you live in, you automatically can afford to get out of your shit neighborhood and live in a decent one. But it is a sort of circular argument, because in order to make double the minimum wage, you have to have some marketable skills or an education. And my contention is all the hundreds of thousands of illegals sneaking in, they know that even though you can get educated and learn thousands of different skills online, they just rather not put in the time because they've all got relatives up in the States, illegal relatives, who send back monthly remises and cute selfies with Mickey Mouse at Disney World. They're constantly hammering it into the heads of the poor folks back home that you just come to the States and you'll have everything. In fact, I was confronted with a perfect example of this just about a week and a half ago. I was having a discussion with a beautiful 30-something Latina. She's got a bachelor's in business and an MBA from a Latin American university. Turns out she's got a brother, a plastics engineer who works up in Canada. So how did he end up in Canada with that job? Well, he was top in his class here in Latin America, took advantage of an exchange program in Montreal, Canada, ended up getting hired permanently there. Now he's married to a Canadian lady, has a family up there, and he invited his sister for a visit. She had no problem getting a tourist visa for 90 days because she's a professional with a bachelor's degree in business and a useless MBA. By the way, did you know that pretty much any kind of professional here in Latin America, bachelor's, master's degree, doctorate degree, if you want to go on vacation to the States, Europe, or Canada, you can qualify legally for a tourist visa, no problem. She flew to Canada for a couple of weeks vacation, had a great time, came back to her home country as usual, went back to work. And guess what? Some of the people at work and some of her relatives, she said, the ones that were not educated and not making much more than minimum wage, they said to her, "I can't believe you didn't stay in Canada." She said, "What do you mean? Of course I couldn't stay there. I only had a tourist visa for 90 days. They still said she was nuts not to stay. She could have blended right in, they said. They all said, "We would have stayed. What's wrong with you? You had a chance. You could have stayed there." She told me she couldn't believe her ears. Her own family were telling her to stay there illegally, you know, overstay her visa, and then she'd be there illegally, obviously. Now, in her defense, she said, "What am I supposed to do as an illegal? Work as a maid? Washing dishes? Become a nanny? Work in a kitchen? Open a taco stand?" She said, "I'm a professional with an MBA. I'm supposed to go backwards in life?" She said the minimum wage earners in her family and her friends just didn't get it. But she said that's their mindset. They're minimum wage grunt workers now, and if they snuck into Canada or the States, that's what they'd be there too. Plus, she said, "I'd be looking over my shoulder for the rest of my life. And I'd never be able to return back to my home to visit my family. I couldn't fly or cross a border legally because my papers wouldn't be correct. They'd show I was in the country illegally." So anyway, the bottom line is the average minimum wage Latino making $300 a month. Their minds have been filled with incorrect ideas and hype. But worst of all, and that educated Latina lady concurred, there's this highly caustic mind virus that's been cemented in the heads of minimum wage Latinos. They've been told it doesn't matter if they've got no marketable skills or education, as long as they can get to the U.S. or Canada, they'll suddenly and automatically be eligible for the good life. Meanwhile, they could have had the good life back home if they'd just have taken the time and the effort to go on the internet, learn a marketable skill, or even learn English. Every single high school and university course is available online for free. But, you know, like anything that's worthwhile, it takes effort. Oh, and you know, 99.9% of the illegals that slip into the United States do not know English. Why don't they? They've had every opportunity since the world's best English instruction is online for free, too. Check out YouTube. It's all there. By the way, you know there are hundreds, if not thousands, of call centers down here that pay twice the minimum wage and more. But you have to be able to speak at a certain rudimentary level of English. You heard what I said before. If you make twice the minimum wage, you can get the hell out of the barrio and live middle class down here in a decent, nicer neighborhood with little or no crime. But alas, again, human nature throws a wrench into the works. Even though the world's biggest library and school system is online for free. But Latinos, like most young Americans, would rather be entertained. These days, practically every last one of them is addicted to Instacrap, Fakebook, Twaddle, and Dickcock. And if you ever catch one of them taking an online course or reading an educational article, you can bet they probably already have a college degree and a decent job making more than double the minimum wage. By the way, that 30-something Latina I was talking about who has a bachelor's and master's degree, she's making triple the minimum wage. Now, that may not sound like much, $900 a month, but she's doing fine. She's got a nice little apartment, a car that's paid for, and, as mentioned, enough money to take a little vacation to see her brother in Canada. Oh, and by the way, if you're wondering if she's married and has kids and all that, since most people in their 30s are in that situation, right? Well, she was married for 10 years, but the guy cheated on her, so she dumped him. Big surprise, huh? Oh, and by the way, she said her big mistake was she didn't go with a guy that had a college education like her. She married her high school sweetheart, a guy from the neighborhood. But like she said, and it's true with women up in the first world too, the more education a woman has, the harder it is to find the right guy. stats show down here in Latin America, just like up in the first world, there are nearly three times as many women with college degrees than there are men. So the numbers bear out the sad fact that college-educated women are often stuck with unmotivated men. Lots of high-value women marry losers. Sound familiar? In other words, lots of young men are sitting in their basements playing video games and watching porn, whereas young women rarely become serious gamers or are into porn. Instead of gaming their lives away, they go to school. You know, it's a funny kind of thing, too. As for me, I spent many years at the university. I disliked every minute of it. I hated grade school, junior high, high school, but I did it. Don't know how, but I did it. Yet, I can't tell you how many girls, ladies, women I know who tell me they loved school. My mother, for example, was one of those. She's another one who's got more degrees than a thermometer. Even after she got married, she loved the university so much she practically lived there. I remember my dad telling me that more than a few times he'd get a phone call at midnight or 1 a.m. from university security. You know, the rent-a-cop saying my mother fell asleep in the library. They'd catch her snoozing at midnight or 1 a.m, the only one in there, when they were checking doors to lock up. Anyway, I can see why lots of guys start the university and never finish because, well, most of us males just don't like it. And it's tough, you know, doing something year after year that you just don't like. Though surveys do show that 60 to 80% of the people in the world don't like their jobs either. But they show up anyway because you get paid and, hell, you gotta eat. All right, let's take an email from listener Jorge. He says, Johnny, Jorge here. I've been back to El Salvador 3 times in the past year. I went back with my parents. They were born there. He said before this year, his parents hadn't been to their home country in 20 years. But being their kid and having relatives there I'd never met before, I often said, let's go, let's go. And they said, no, it's simply too dangerous. However, since Bukele got elected, my parents and all their friends back in Salvador they still keep in contact with say he's doing a fine job. They also say, screw those U.S., Canada, and European human rights organizations that never took a position and remained silent when El Salvador had 40-plus murders a day. When it was the most violent country in the world, they didn't do a thing. They didn't say a thing. In fact, he says, my relatives back in El Salvador and my parents wonder why, when the news media hears good news, they constantly spin it in a negative way. Why, he says, do the international media reports up in the States and Europe, etc., why do they always post pictures of criminals instead of the happy faces of the population that are finally free after 40 years of extortion, unspeakable crimes, and oppression? He says, my Salvadoranian friends and relatives can only think that the First World news media is trying to manipulate us by infusing doubt in the minds of its readers. Somehow they just don't like a success story. It's just got to be spun that it came at the expense of all kinds of human rights violations. It just seems so surreal. The do-gooders say the gangbangers' rights have been violated. Well, guess what? It's not the gangbangers' rights that have been violated. It's the facts, F-A-C-T-S, that have been violated. Then, Jorge says, as a Salvadoranian U.S. citizen with an extended family who is Salvadoranian, I could care less about the opinions of any human rights watch groups at this point. The country is safe now, and that's all that matters. Signed, longtime listener Jorge from Dallas, Texas. Then he says, P.S., funny thing about fate. As much as the gangbangers preyed on Salvador society, if it wasn't for them, I'd never have been born in the States, or maybe never been born at all, since it was my tormented parents who made the decision to get out more than 20 years ago. All right, we're getting to the end of the show now. You know, the other day I was thinking about all the things I'm getting to hate. Must be old age or something. Or maybe it's your tolerance level that erodes as you get older. So on that note, let me tell you about a couple things I hate and see if you agree with me. I just hate it when you're sitting at an outdoor bar, restaurant, cafe, whatever, and some jerk in a car or truck passes by with his stereo blasting out at thousands of watts. You can feel the bass notes pounding a block away as it's coming up on you. I hate that, don't you? Or am I just being picky or grumpy? And the thing that makes it doubly worse is it's always rap or reggaeton. Another thing I hate. This might sound like I'm prudish. Never thought I was. Well, no more than the average fallen Catholic anyway. But you know what I can't stand? I'll be sitting around at a coffee shop, whatever, with a bunch of expat gringos, and one of the guys will say, hey, look at this. And he'll show me his phone, some hot, sexy chick, always some other girl, other than his wife or girlfriend. In other words, grown men showing hot chicks to me on their phones is not cool. Funny thing, too, it's almost always gringos and expats who are doing that. Never local Latinos. And you'd think they'd be all for it, the way they screw around and cheat, but they don't do that. So it's not Latinos, but grown-ass gringo men who are acting like adolescent boys in a locker room. When that happens, I'm thinking, come on, get over it. That's so high school. I just don't get it. What are they trying to prove? Anytime, any place, you could find 1,000 sexy girls on your phone. Big deal. Come on, guys, don't you have better things to do? Another thing I can't stand is sitting around with a bunch of gringos who are talking politics, as if changing parties or presidents will actually change or mean anything at all. It won't. The Titanic has already hit the iceberg. It's just useless, dumb, stale, and meaningless to think there's a guy that can get in that'll fix that. All the while I'm thinking, the more someone pumps their candidate, the more clueless and uninformed I start thinking that person is. You know what else I sort of hate? When women say the F word. I realize guys have always said it a lot more than women, but the women are catching up. Funny thing, too, because when I was growing up, I never once heard my dad say it. None of his friends either. Until I was maybe 16 years old and they took me to a Packer Bear game. Then, after a few beers, all the barriers came down. And now, in telephone conversations and family get-togethers, my own sisters are slipping it in once in a while. Oh, and man, I remember a time you would never say that in front of my mom. I remember at Thanksgiving once my brother blurted it out. Man, did he get hell for it. The thing is, down here in Latin America, the F word is not a swear word. No one uses it. However, you'll see once in a while, Latinos giving each other the finger because they've seen Americans do it in Hollywood movies and such. And some guys who were illegals up in the States got deported and brought the custom back down with them. But using the F word? Not really. They have their own versions of four-letter words that are usually five or six letters. All right, here's another thing I hate. People who work at stores who don't know dick about the products they sell. Don't even know what shelf they're on. Another thing I've learned to hate? Going to weddings. Oh, and QR code menus instead of physical menus at restaurants drives me nuts too. Then there's those air dryers in restrooms. How gross. And how about those waterless urinals, please? Oh, and I can't stand loudmouth kids and their indulgent parents. Bottom line, when I was younger, I used to be a people person, but people ruined it for me. All right, those are my top old guy gripes. Which ones did I miss? Send me an email, theexpatfiles@gmail.com.
You've been listening to The Expat Files, Living in Latin America. If you need some help with your own Plan B, we can schedule a one-on-one phone or Skype consult. Just send me an email, theexpatfiles@gmail.com. And if you want to get on the waiting list for my next week-long Expat Insider Seminar in Central America, where you're guaranteed to get a 2 to 5 year head start on your Plan B, send me an email, theexpatfiles@gmail.com. Nos vemos.